Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about season 10. Is this the first time I've ever typed S10 episode 01 into my
document?
It was
weird, right?
It feels strange.
It's like I felt like I was getting put my pants on backwards. I got the zeros in funny places. This is just not
like
right.
You're putting your shin pants on backwards.
That was. You don't. And you maybe put them on wrong side out. You can get twice the use out of your shitting pants if you do that.
That's so true.
Backwards, that's just spreading the mess to places where it shouldn't be.
It's called Lines We Cross for obvious reasons. Aaron, what do you think of this episode?
I fucking love this episode. This episode made me laugh. This episode actually threatened to make me cry with some of the moments between Carol and Daryl. What have I been clamoring for all my years covering this fucking show?
Z Nation.
Actual Z. Yeah, go Gonzo. And show me examples of humans adapting to their newfound living conditions. And boy, I'm getting the intersection of Z Nation and fucking bushcrafting. Dude. And you know, goddamn flour mills and all that stuff. Like I love it. I love it. I thought this episode was great. I tell you this, that like two seasons ago, if I'd have seen an episode start with a black title card and became aware that I was going to be watching three or four interleaved, I'd be like, oh God, hand me a pistol. It's time to blow my brains out. I don't want to turn into a zombie. But I'm like, oh, this is actually probably going to be cool and interesting. And it was like I was thinking, like, is this just bullshit or is this the most effective way to tell this episode's story? And I actually think, yeah, they didn't do this just for, hey, you know what's cool? Starting an episode with black title cards and doing some kind of like multi-act plot structure. Saw it on Mr. Robot last season. Everybody loved it. They did it because it made story sense. What did you think, Jim?
Yeah, I mean, the title card stuff is helping us get reintroduced to all of our characters, and God, I needed it. It's only been it feels like 2 months since we stopped, since we finished season 9, and I've already forgotten everything that happened in season 9. I think Rick blew up a bridge. I remember that.
Yep. It's immortalized in the credit sequence now.
There was a 5-year time jump or so last year, Yeah, and there was like there had to be a further time jump here because, you know, Aaron's getting tired of living under the border rules.
It feels like we jumped from dead winter to like height of summer because everything's dry and, you know, okay.
6 months-ish. Enough time to get frustrated with the borders? Probably.
Yeah, 6 months of living under fear of, you know, this unseen threat that keeps you pinned into certain areas. And especially since, you know, Aaron's starting to be a little Phantom of the Opera. You know, he's feeling a certain way about his state in the world and whether he's still a good moral agent or not.
We'll have to talk about that because can I define something for the listener here? Can I define my definition of the word stupid? Because I'm about to use the word a lot, and I feel like we all just need to have an understanding. So when I say something is stupid, a lot of the times I mean I don't like it. In some rare occurrences, I actually love it, and it's still incredibly stupid. Z Nation is the perfect example of this.
Yeah.
Where like... Yeah. The events are just there because they're Gonzo. You shouldn't take it too seriously. And the more ridiculous it gets, the better it gets. And I feel like Walking Dead is trending pretty stupid right now. And this episode is a perfect example of it. And I loved it.
You know, I see what you're saying. Like, you know, Z Nation stupid. Sharknado stupid. Pacific Rim is stupid. Pacific Rim 2 is like the bad kind of stupid.
Fast and Furious is stupid.
Fast and Furious, stupid. Yeah. Stupid as hell. Can't get enough of it.
All things I love. Yeah. So that's
what that's what makes Fast and Furious work. Like, you care about the characters and their fucking family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's stupid. It always comes back to the characters, man. You gotta have good characters and good character moments, or else you don't care about anything else. So,
I mean, they're running dangerously low on characters that I really care about. And I noticed this in the scene where Carol and Daryl were sitting down just chatting, and they were talking about, you know, how Daryl knows that Maggie's doing something with Georgie. Did they explain that last season? Because if so, I forget.
Mm-hmm. Georgie is the lady that showed up with the Secret Service agents and the crate full of records to rebuild society.
But Maggie, do we know what Maggie's doing with her?
No.
Okay.
No, which makes there is some actual stupidity in this episode. And, you know, what would Walking Dead be without
any? The thing is, they probably don't know what Maggie's doing, right? Like, they just know that Lauren Cohen wanted off the show to go do her other show.
That's what I'm saying.
And but, now but they should have time before she comes back.
Yeah, we're two seasons into this. Like, come up with it. Like, we should know a little bit about the project for the future or whatever the fuck they're working on, the CPAC. Conservative pack for an American future or whatever.
Well, next season. Is that right? Season 11, she's going to be back. So
I don't know. Like, God, I hope so. Like, what the hell is she's like too busy during COVID to like come back to The Walking Dead. Then like, she's never coming back. Right. Yeah. You know, all other shows have been canceled except for the zombie apocalypse one. Like, certainly. But no, I got a couple questions along those lines, you know, along the way as well, because it does seem like they are delaying too much, maybe being forthcoming about what's going on with that, but who knows.
But I don't know how many characters do I actually care about here. I don't really care about Lydia. I don't really care about the new people all that much. Connie and Kelly and
not Professor Luke. Connie and Kelly, Magna. I'm all in on. I love Professor Luke. I am lukewarm about Magna and slightly or definitely not shitty Bow Girl, very competent Bow Girl. You know, that she hasn't earned her actual name yet, and neither has Professor, although I'll call Professor Luke.
Yumiko,
sure.
Yumiko or something.
I think it's Yumiko. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, Connie and Kel, I'm all in on. I am very I'm curious about like what kind of like seemingly congenital, hearing defect is like late onset like this. Maybe the thing is like my takes on The Walking Dead season 10 are going to be less informed than my usual takes, because I just refuse to do research, because I have come perilously close to being massively spoiled just verifying a character name on a Wikipedia article. So it's like I'm watching it and I'm having my thoughts about it, and I'll do research on like Soviet satellite technology and things like that. We are watching it on it's nice having it on Amazon, because I can check characters' names real quick just by pushing up on my controller.
Oh yeah. The first episode is free. I don't know if the others are too.
Think the first three are free from what I can see. And then you gotta pay.
Yeah, and it's not on Netflix. Yeah, they usually get them like a week or two before the new season airs.
It wouldn't surprise me if, because didn't they just wrap up the six bonus episodes, or maybe they're just
starting them.
Okay, so I wouldn't be surprised if after those finish airing that all of season 10. Well, no, but that's considered season 10.
It is. Yeah.
These six bonus episodes are what's keeping it off of Netflix, I feel like.
Yeah, it usually takes a while. It's usually like right before the next season starts, which I don't know when they plan on releasing season 11.
I heard 2022.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, so they're just taking a whole pandemic year, huh?
Yeah.
Crazy. Scraping together the scraps left on the cutting room floor into six episodes and then moving on.
This might be a good time to talk about our plan. Because our plan is to do these first eight episodes and then take a little break, do the next eight episodes, perhaps take a little break, and then whatever we do, time the final six episodes, these bonus episodes, to drop the 6 weeks leading up to season 11. Now, I just looked on the website, and apparently season 11 is expected to drop in October, November of this year.
Okay.
So if they make that, then we probably will have to hustle up a little bit, but you know, we still got a lot of time.
All right, let's take a quick break and then we'll get into the recap.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
This Tuesday, we're back off the clock with a new premium podcast covering our experiences with the new Amazon series Fallout, Alex Garland's Civil War, as well as some thoughts on X-Men 97.
Then on Friday, The Old Reliable, Lunch with Jim and Aaron. Join us in the Munch Crowd to watch us record live at 1 p.m. Eastern, or check out the podcast later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds. We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
All right, we start off with a scene that I'm not even sure I can describe. It's called Training Day. It doesn't star Denzel Washington at all, which I was disappointed by.
Oh wait, you're skipping the satellite. You're skipping the satellite.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, I was gonna package this all together because it's all equally stupid. So
okay,
I thought I turned on the wrong show. Or I thought I like had a preview for All Mankind or something.
I did too. I thought something was up.
Has this show ever gone to space before? Okay. There are series that start grounded, literally, on the planet Earth and end up in space. Like the Jason series is an example of this.
Oh, okay.
And okay. Jason X, which is Jason in space, is one of the dumbest things I've ever seen, the stupidest things I've ever seen, and yet I love it. This show is going to that place. It has now, I think, probably zombies falling from space. There have to be astronauts in there, right?
I don't know. I think it's just a satellite. I don't think this is like the old, what do they call it? Mirror?
It's not.
Space station? Mm-hmm. No, I don't think so. I don't think it's big enough.
Damn.
But it is an interesting idea of like how long would the space station, like I imagine the space station has burned up and deorbited a long time ago. Although I will say this, and this will become clear as we get further in the episode. I am willing to grant a few scientific leaps. I mean, I'm already granting the idea that these zombies are just coming back to life and they're still walking around, even though some of them don't even have muscles on their legs anymore.
Yeah.
Just bones. So I'm willing to grant this a few logical leaps if it leads to something very, very cool. And yeah, if we can have zombies in space, you know, 6-7 years of, if the space station's still up there, like I fully support that.
Is that what Eugene's going to be working on? Is he going to try and get them off the planet?
No, I'm waiting. Oh, I got a bonkers theory to talk about.
So this satellite, you know, starts falling and you kind of tell it's deorbiting. And then we go to the beach where the group is performing like the most over serious phalanx maneuver on three zombies that I've ever seen. And I get that they preface this with Training Day, the title card, like telling us, hey, these are just, you know, newbies out on their training mission. But like, they're training them poorly, right? Like they're opening the line to let the zombies through. What That's not a phalanx. Why have the shields if you're just going to open up and let them in?
They're not letting... No, well, okay. They let a lot of them in. I thought there was it was cool because this makes a lot of sense. You're battling a enemy that uses zombies as weapons. Mm-hmm. Your traditional plan of just hiding behind walls and shooting or stabbing them is not going to work. You're going to have to go out and meet them on the open field. So, you know, phalanx is a great way to do that, I thought. Mm-hmm. However, I was a little disheartened when the shit hit the fan because, it's, yeah, you're training these people. You're having Eugene or who was it? It was Jerry and Ezekiel like let out a couple zombies at a time so they could practice their formations and the archery. All that stuff was really cool. But when the shit hit the fan and they were dealing with a massive zombies, the first thing they did is break up the phalanx.
Yeah. They're terrible.
Okay, yeah, that's someone who I don't know. I felt like they'd read maybe more than the first two paragraphs of the Wikipedia article on phalanx. They might have made something even cooler.
Yeah, I read a whole three paragraphs. I understand what hoplites are, and I gotta say, like, you don't open holes in your phalanx. You just don't do it because that's when your phalanx breaks, and they open it up so that Judith. Can kill a walker through the middle of their phalanx. Put her on Daryl's shoulders and let her go over the top because that's what you do with a phalanx.
I actually don't mind the military precision of which a phalanx can snap open and to allow skirmishers to go forth and take sure. down stragglers or whatever. If there's the whispers in the crowd whipping them up, like I don't mind that. Like I actually think it's cool. It's just that when you have an effective wall and then you just bust it up into units of two, like that's not a phalanx. That's just two dudes holding a shield.
Right.
Like you can get around that phalanx by stepping one step to the side. It's a lot harder when you're dealing with like a shield wall 60 feet wide. So but. I fucking love I expect them to take the formation stuff like really seriously. You know, it's like there's no like casual military drilling, right?
It's just serious.
I love the driftwood zombie. I love the zombies that don't even have lower legs anymore. They're just skeletons like Jason and Argonaut style running around. Like I don't know how that works.
I mean, dude, we saw a water walker in the timeline of this show like 8 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And it was already bloated and disintegrating. I don't know how these saltwater walkers are anything but jelly at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I've seen what water does to a human virus, body. Man. It's insane.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they would be skeletonized just from the crabs actions, yeah. But I love like the everyone's, you know, like getting down low for the ranged attackers. Like this is like playing Civilizations or Total War, right? You got Boss and Rob zombies. fucking riders of Rohanning zombies with these giant spears, and also Michonne slow motion de-chroming the domes of these zombies. I thought this is the first time we've seen like long heroic loving Zack Snyder shots of slow-mo zombie killing. Why has it taken 10 seasons for the visual people to realize that this looks good and is awesome? Like all these hero shots of, you know, people close up.
Yeah.
Just make a meal out of it because it's awesome. But I like
they're
it.
Doing a lot of new camera stuff and stylish visual flair. We commented a couple of seasons or maybe last season how they had started doing like drone shots. And there are a couple of drone shots in this episode, which look really cool. One here on the beach and then one later when they're riding out toward the woods.
Plus, just having this on a beach, like having an actual different terrain, like Oceanside's always just been a different part of the forest in Georgia. Like I love the river sets, the beach sets. Like they got these, you know, looks like something from Half-Life 2 or Destiny where they got these ships like rotted into the sand. Like It's nice. It's nice to work with a different palette, some different terrain for once.
Yeah. So then after the beach phalanx, Stradivarius, Professor Luke, you called him, gets hit on by a woman whose name we never find out.
Actually, it's Jules.
Jules?
I can help you with that. Jules, yeah.
Do they say it in this episode?
He says it. Yeah, he says it.
Oh, okay. I missed that.
Yeah.
Daryl and Michonne are pleased with Oceanside's military prowess, and Judith is playing with Jerry's kids and RJ, who found a zombie face skin on the beach.
Mm-hmm. And the damn mask. I like Michonne and Daryl talking about how much the kids are having fun. And it's also nice to see, like, Judith is a very tough little girl, but she's still a little girl. She likes playing with shells. She likes coloring and drawing. Like, I like that they're not going with, like, these kids have just completely, because I feel like that's realistic. Like, even in war-torn countries, like, as soon as the bombs start falling, the kids are out in the street with the soccer balls, you know, and, like, you're going to run around and have fun as much as you can. And I like that. I like the community having more children that are not just, like, a scared hindrance or whatever. It's great. It's good stuff.
Sure. And then we get the skin title card. And after finding the skin, Aaron's on the radio telling the other camps to go on lockdown. But Michonne says, nah, just go on alert instead. And Aaron convinces her to at least go out on a search for the signs of the Whisperers. During the search, Aaron wonders aloud to Michonne if we're the baddies. And Aaron then spots walkers on a bridge, and he crosses the Whisperers' borders to almost get eaten. And there's the tension of living under the threat of the Whisperers is definitely getting to him. And Michonne tells him, hey, we got to be smart. And I understand what you're going through, but let's do this the right way. Then someone on the walkie tells her that she needs to see something.
Yeah, I like, first of all, I really like the horseback rangers. You know, I talked about last year that, like, we were threatening to have a cool post-apocalyptic Western breakout. And then when Angus Sampson died, I'm like, oh, man, that's the dream of the Walking Dead Western. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like I feel like it's still pretty. We got a lot of frontier, you know, horse riding kind of moments in this episode. So maybe I'll still get a little bit of my walking Western. I also like, there's like this, there's a lot of things that made me wonder what the hell was going on in my first watch, like Daryl saying, hey, tell her that she can't leave again without saying goodbye. I'm like, what the hell is he talking about? Of course, it ends up it's piratical Carol. And you know, like, so we talked a little bit about this pre-podcast, Aaron starting to show the faintest whiff of Morgulizing. Are we the baddies? Like, with this is a literal meme.
No prompting. I don't understand where this comes from, because as best I can tell, they've had no interactions with anyone new up to this point. What changed that would make him, you know, have this question on his mind the whole time?
Well, I think he was one of the ones that was promoting openness and free trade and, like, relaxing of restrictions leading up to the massacre that happened at the festival. And then he caught completely different religion when it came at that point. So I think he now is, like, you know, wanting to be more aggressive and head out and meet these enemies so they can get back to living their relatively free lives. And he's wondering if he's lost himself in the plot, you know, like when he said, like, you know, it's like, I was always a nice guy. And then Eric died and Jesus died, which I thought for like a split second, it's like, is he for some kind of Nietzsche, like, God is, oh no, right, there's an actual Jesus on this show that got killed last season.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like, cause, like, being a nice guy, like in the capital N, capital G kind of the word, is not a great thing. It's not, you know, like there's a lot of drawbacks to being a pushover, and it can make you, like, angry and resentful. But the opposite of that, which is being, like, just, like, you know, cocky and arrogant and spoiling for a fight, is also insane. Like, it's you don't want to go for aggression. You just want to be assertive. And I feel like that's what he's feeling. He's the nice guy who's starting to feel like he's getting aggressive. And this was, like, yeah, literally stupid what he did charging ahead. Like, Michonne pointed out, it's like, if this was Whisperers, you would have been dead. It wasn't Whisperers, and you still almost got dead.
Yeah.
I to a certain point, I like it, especially from a character who's been so squeaky clean as Aaron. If he wears a tiara, that's fine with me. But I you know what I mean? I'm open.
I don't want the whole season to be this. If this is what the season is, we've already had this one, not even one too many times, probably multiple too many times. If this whole season turns into, are we the baddies again, I'm going to be disappointed.
They ain't us, Jim. So I know.
I mean, so many times we ain't them. Yeah.
But another, like, it's really cool. Location and like Michonne bringing up, it's like, well, this isn't us being nice. This is us protecting our people because we're negotiating with crazy people to hold a nuke.
Yeah.
Interesting how she described the situation here. They're in a standoff with one side that has a nuclear weapon.
It's a Russian satellite falling.
Wonder what kind of power source that Russian satellite that fell that Eugene might have pillaged.
I don't know.
Do the Walking Dead writers know that nuclear weapons don't work that way, Jim? I'm not so sure.
Does it matter?
Kind of on board team Eugene making a fat boy.
I was going to say, yep. Yeah, I don't know that I care if it works that way or not.
I want him taking it up on a hot air balloon, 1,000 feet in the air. And I want him like having to, the release mechanism's gone wrong. He has to climb out there and undo it. I want to see him riding.
Slim
Pickens. Yeah. Like Slim Pickens. I want it. Yes. Yes. I want all of that. I want all of that. That's my Jesus. Gonzo theory.
All right. I mean, hey man, last season we called a Ren Faire and it happened. So
that's right.
Yeah, call that nuke.
Chekhov's nuke analogy. It's going to go off. You just wait.
So then we find the group has found an abandoned campsite with bodies scattered around. Also a human skin. And yeah. We also see the rare naked walker that isn't completely deteriorated. Like there was still an ass on that walker. And they say he must have been here for a while. Walker. I don't know about that. He looks fresh.
Yeah, looked pretty freshy fresh. And also not skin. What's up with that?
What's up with that?
But I don't think he was a walker. I think that there was a camp of people that the Whisperers overran and he's just a freshie. I guess they don't skin those. Like, I don't know. Like, what's the difference between a walker skin and a regular skin that you just kind of leave out to dry for a while?
Yeah. Good question.
I don't know.
You'd have to ask a Whisperer.
Did you notice that this, like, because that's the kind of guy I was. I actually looked to see and there was there's nipples on the zombie skin.
Well, every skin has nipples. Here, yeah. I don't know if you're aware of this.
No, you're right. You're right. I thought you're right. I would draw my observation that these were skin titties. I don't even know why I'm making this observation. I will say this. I didn't think that the Whisperers literally wore the entire skin.
Right. I thought it was just the face, just the mask.
Yeah, they have the hands, like, you know, right. So they wear the gloves. But like, I don't know. This seems like a skin too far for me. But maybe they use it to make other things.
Okay.
I don't know.
So here's the most disturbing part about this entire scene. They head back to Oceanside, but apparently... Mm-hmm. Aaron has like folded this skin up like a blanket and tucked it under his arm to take it back to town. Why? What is he making Eric puppets back in his apartment? What is happening here that he needs skins, Bill?
No, like, Jesus, he's not going to make it. He's not going to make an Eric puppet. He's going to dress it up in a flannel shirt with a vest, sit in a rocking chair. No, I don't know.
I'm guessing he's
going to use it to fearmonger. Like, you know, it's one thing to be like, hey, we saw evidence of Whisperers. Everybody be on alert. It's another to like throw a skin zombie down and be like, they've come back. Fear for your lives and children. But he didn't really do that. So
no, he doesn't.
I don't know.
He is halfway to an Eric puppet, though. I'm saying between the skin and the face.
It's also like these are cross lines. This is evidence, like this is on their side of the fence. So this is evidence of Whisper activity, a border breach.
Oh.
And we still don't know from last year whether the Whisperers, right? We don't know whether the Whisperers knew about their wintertime. I can't remember if there's evidence that they did or didn't.
It doesn't seem like they did because I would have thought they were just with the final.
Plus the final look between, I mean, they do know at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
That final look between Lydia and Carol.
So he's tucked this skin blanket under his arm. Michonne reassures him that they're definitely the good guys still. Then she overhears Judith telling RJ the story of her father, the brave man sacrificing himself to save all his friends. And she briefly gets in on the family time action, but then there is an explosion in the sky, which we'll find out is the satellite coming down, and Eugene calls with an urgent message for Michonne.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the moralizing is what it is, but like a little bit of discussion about like what it means to be good and making active choices to be good, and like when do you start making choices that are expedient rather than good? That's something that I have a little bit of appetite for, some things that we could give some consideration for today. And that the scene of Judith, like, I'm loving that they're getting more RJ in and her explaining like how their dad died through this like metaphor of the brave man and how he lives in all of our hearts and makes us brave too. Got a little misty eyed, man. That little Judith is good. It doesn't hurt that she's a dead ringer for my niece, but, I'm a sucker for Judith. She's real cute.
She's good. Yeah. And I don't know, the older she gets, the probably more comfortable I'm going to feel with her speaking the way she does. But man, the kid playing RJ is just not an actor. Like, I don't know if you were paying attention to him. I know he's very young and I'm not blaming him for this. I'm just saying he's in these scenes where like he should be kind of wondering what's going on, maybe playing a little more serious. And he's just smiling ear to ear. Like they've got lollipops just off screen and he knows he's getting one.
Oh, this must
shot.
Be a hell of a fun shoot. Like I bet like Norman Reedus is off this. He's like trying to make him crack up and
right.
You know, like this, I bet the like all interacting with them and seeing them interact in person. I feel like this cast really does love each other and, you know, they do have a lot of fun. And I think that like, yeah, it's hard to keep the 5 and 6 year olds from having gleeful looks on their faces when there's this much fun and coolness going on.
It does make me wonder which producer's son that is, but who knows? All right, before we move on to bird wisdom, let's take a little break. We'll be right back.
Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what 2-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
So I was already kind of hyped up on how stupid this episode was. mm-hmm. with the satellites falling from space and driftwood zombies and bad phalanxes. And then Bird Wisdom came on the screen. I just threw my hands up. I couldn't take it. It's too much, yeah. man. It's so dumb. Yeah.
It is. Bird shit wisdom.
Bird shit wisdom. Oh, God, that's such a good line. So we flash back to the call that Aaron made earlier, and we see it from Gabriel's POV this time. Also, Eugene and Rosita are parenting, each in their own ways. Eugene being mm-hmm. very analytical, Rosita punching things. Gabriel's expression tells Sadiq that everything is not okay. I swear at one point Eugene was measuring this baby's ass.
Yeah, he's taking extensive measurements. He's like, there's also where was he trying to sneak a peek at Rosita's goodies, or was he just like dispassionately looking for a good latch?
Because
I could honestly buy either way. Like he's looking, maybe he's like, hey, is there a good nipple latch on there, or?
Yeah, I think the only nipple latch happening was his eyes on her nipples.
It's latched onto the breastfeeding. Come on, Eugene, be better.
I know. It's the way she shakes Rosita, her head at him. That's why I think that.
But Rosita, like, getting herself back into fighting shape. That was mm-hmm. cool.
Raising this baby on funk. And it loves it.
Yeah, funky taste of music this kid's got. Speaking of Eugene's Blacknell and the New Breed is the song we're listening to. I'm so thankful.
Huh.
But yeah, I like it. We also confirmed that like Eugene, like, you know, his efforts last season and Rosita's efforts were not in vain. They have got a new radio mesh going where the communities can once again talk. I guess we knew that with the Ezekiel giving out his announcements and stuff over the tower and whatnot.
Right.
It's nice to see that that's all working according to plan. And just seeing this kind of like quadruple, you know, the Eugene, Gabriel, Rosita, Sadiq kind of situation unfolding mm-hmm. and everyone's various ways they're fitting in there, I thought is really entertaining.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know what Gabriel's like status is in this family at the moment, but he doesn't seem to be very involved. Seems to be Eugene and Rosita mostly taking care of this baby and Gabriel care of the town.
I wonder if Gabriel's like, now that he's got a kid, or at least part stake in one, he's like gone super conservative, like hyper vigilant against threats, because he's almost like he almost like disassociates here,
yeah.
like fixating on these threats to the community. It's just kind of wild to see.
Yeah. Then we go over to Lydia, who is learning to read, but she hates it. And the town council kicks the kids out of the schoolhouse in order to have a meeting. So Lydia goes outside and practices her weapons training. And Negan uses it as an opportunity to get some information about that town meeting from her.
Yeah, and the shitty neck tattoo girl they've given her a JCPenney catalog, and she is fully integrated into the Alexandria community. She is no longer a quote unquote bad girl. She's just wearing the Jacqueline Smith collection now, and like everybody else.
She must just kind of funny blend the visual into coding. The scenery, because I missed her.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. She's not even Shitty Bo. She's just Karen from down the block now.
Wow. I like Lydia practicing with it. Like, I get it. I get what you're doing here. You've got the bow staff. You're out there practicing just like Henry did. But
with a twist,
it's a nunchuck bow staff. I don't know what to call this weapon.
The technical term for that is a flail, Jim. A flail.
Really? I thought a flail was like the thing with the ball on the end of it.
Well, but that is a type of flail.
Okay. So just like a piece connected by a chain to another piece is a flail.
Yeah. I believe so. Okay. Yeah. I think it's also funny Lydia's assertion that reading's not natural. Like, where the fuck did reading come from, man?
Like, I mean, I guess but we invented it.
I mean, if it's not natural, what is it? Like, sure. Man-made? Are we not part of nature? Like, I mean, I know, like, splitting the atom, sure. Smelting steel, fine. But communication? Written communication's not natural? I don't know. Yeah. Even like bears mark the territory by scratching trees. That's just saying no trespassing. So come on.
True.
Come on. It's natural.
Yeah. We see Negan working, like doing a forced labor, I guess. He's tending to the crops.
Supervised labor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's taking out the trash. And then we go over to Sadiq, who's taking care of the baby Coco. And he has a bunch of flashbacks to the Whisperers. And the new nurse, doctor, nurse, I don't know what he is.
I think doctor.
He might be a doctor. He certainly plays one on television. The new doctor, Dante, interrupts to introduce himself to the audience as a god among men.
He's a lot, Jim.
Wow. Yeah.
My first thought is, wow, we're at a run on hot doctors here in the apocalypse. Just collecting them. And then second is like, this guy is just a lot.
Yeah.
Are they implying that he is a Whisperer spy?
So I was going to ask you about this because, you know, Sadiq's staring at his mouth and he's having all these flashbacks. And I think they're either implying that he is or they're implying that Sadiq is paranoid and thinks he might be.
Yeah. And this guy being unlikable from like a broad perspective, I think. Is probably hell because do you believe that even one of Lydia's or not Lydia, the Alpha's top lieutenants could pass for human this easily?
I mean, she did it. I mean, she was like, weird. She was fucking weird when she did it.
That's what I'm saying. She was weird and kind of off-putting. Like, you know, someone could just like, you know, shave and brush their teeth and, you know, put on some nice clothes and a white jacket and be like,
could you pass for a doctor to another doctor, though? That's the question.
Well, I believe a doctor could become a Whisperer, you know, like gun to their head or like zombie horde to their throat. Like, hey, sure. You want to go return to nature? Or do you want to keep trying this medicine shit, doc? But I do feel like that if they ever got to like the place they're in now, they would be like, oh, thank God I can stop. But I don't know. Maybe he's that brainwashed. I just don't buy it. I'm thinking that you're right. That Sadiq is the, you know, like, are we the baddies? This is going to be one of the things we explore through the way he treats Dante.
Sure.
So, yeah. And maybe the way Dante's like, yeah, when Alexander gets her first net nurse, she's really going to hate Dante. I can guarantee you. I can guarantee that.
Oh, yeah. As soon as he says, kiss me already.
Yeah.
Which I thought the scene was funny, but like.
Yeah.
I don't think we're supposed to necessarily like Dante.
Yeah.
He's a bit much.
No. Yeah.
All right. Negan tells Gabriel that pants shitting is happening and that he's going to lay low until it passes over. So not to be mistaken for the enemy. And he also tries to convince Gabriel to lie to the community in order to make them feel safe. And Gabriel goes outside and does exactly the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't believe that you should lie to the population. Like, I think, you know, you either believe that most people are reasonable and rational actors or you fucking don't. So I think Negan's wrong here. I think, but also it's like one of those things where Negan's also right, because when shit starts hitting the fan, people do get real tribal. We just looked at that in The Expanse, you know, that civilization falls apart, the tribes get smaller. Well, Negan is, like I said, he's kind of like working his way from them to us, but like if push comes to shove right now, he'll be right back in that us, or right back in that them pile, and said the same thing to Lydia too. And I think that is true. Yeah. But he's head up his ass if he thinks that like what you got to do is tell the population like half truths and lies.
No, I mean, if they ever find out, it undermines your authority in the future. Why would you? If they don't trust you, they're not going to listen to you. So.
Right.
So then there's the explosion in the sky again. The satellite falls and Eugene runs off to get Michonne on the radio. And then we go to Sea Dogs, which is the next title card, where we see Aaron's radio call again. This time we follow Daryl to the beach where Kelly is losing her hearing and Connie is trying to cheer her up. Then Daryl waves to her as his dog runs over there and Kel thinks that Connie has the hots for him. I like to see.
Yeah, that's pretty cute. Also, I wrote in my notes when Daryl waved hi to them, I'm like, Daryl has mastered the art of sign language. And I was just making a joke. But then, of course, Daryl's the type of guy that's making an effort to learn how to communicate with his new best friend, Connie.
Sure.
Maybe something more, Connie. Maybe there'll be a love triangle between Connie and Carol. I don't know.
Also, I can see a lot of uses for sign language in the zombie apocalypse.
Oh, yeah. Like, honestly, I don't. It seems like Spanish is the popular second language to learn in school in America. I've often wondered if American Sign Language wouldn't be better.
Yeah,
because if everyone coming out of high school knew both English and sign language, well, then everyone would have at least a second language to fall back on if there was communication problems. Right. And it's just such a fucking useful thing. Like, you can communicate over vast distances with like fucking binoculars and stuff without any kind of electronics and stuff. And yeah, you can be silently repetitious and,
you know, you're not going to attract zombie attention.
Yeah, you can ask somebody for a piece of candy in the movie theater without whispering and annoying people. Like, there's all kinds of practical uses for it.
That's true.
Now, I will say that, like, I've got some familiarity with the deaf community. I grew up next to a neighbor who is deaf, and I learned a little bit of it myself. I actually learned a lot of it. I've forgotten a lot of it now. But and this could be ignorance. I don't know that there's a strain of like some kind of deafness that does strike later in life. Like, I know that like if you get a high fever or certain illnesses, but like something that almost seems genetic, like my sister's got it and I'm like 20, 21. It's time for me to start going deaf too. I assume it's got to be a thing. I don't think they would just make that shit up. But
yeah.
Yeah. As someone who's lost about a third of their hearing, I relate, because it's like, it's not so much I feel like I've lost my hearing. It's just I'm aware that I have a hard time following conversations in loud environments or around tables where lots of people are talking. Mm-hmm. Just kind of like, I remember when I started losing my eyesight as a kid, I didn't think like the world was getting blurrier. It's just like, why is the teacher writing so light on the chalkboard now? Like, yeah. Why can't she just fucking push harder? And I got my glasses on. I'm like, oh, fuck, it was me the whole time. But yeah, I'm curious about what this is going to like how this is going to impact the plot or, you know, be interesting going forward.
Yeah, I mean, it is a good character moment between the two of them. You've got characters who I think are both scared, and one of them is doubly scared because she's experiencing this new thing that she doesn't quite understand. You know, she describes it in a way that's like, well, it's just conversations get muddy sometimes when there's a lot happening. I imagine that's pretty scary. And these actors are doing a great job.
And if you're doing like it's scary enough in the world we live in today, but in an apocalyptic situation and a wartime situation, it must be even more terrifying. Although there would be something pleasing about, you know, setting aside Eugene's tactical nuke. If one of the weapons they used to defeat the Whisperers was literally silence, like sign language communication and stuff, that would be kind of cool. Imagine a
scenario. Yeah, yeah, I'm sure you could set like
something up. Spring and traps, kind of. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. So Ezekiel has a lot of thoughts about birds and bird shit and bird attacks. He decides to tell Daryl all about him. And Connie then brings Daryl's dog back and flirts with him a bit. And then Carol brings the fishing boat into dock and has a mildly awkward reunion with Ezekiel and a heartwarming one with Daryl.
That's exactly. Carol's coming in on the shrimp boat.
Yeah, man. Pirate Carol. Boy. I mean, if you wanted to take, if there was nowhere to go, nowhere else to go with Carol, right? She's already been Rambo. Like, you got to turn her into a badass pirate.
Yeah, she's been weird mountain grandma that just stays out on the back 40 and never comes visit into town. Yeah, piratical Carol is pretty fucking sweet.
Turn her into the dread
pirate Carol. Yeah, I do like it. I don't understand why they're being so coy about Maggie. Like, why don't these people know exactly what Maggie's doing? Why isn't she writing like her letters? Like, she surely is filling them in. It's like, oh, we're doing such great work. Yesterday, we just reinvented the oil derrick, or, you know, someone got a rudimentary microwave going, or, you know, we just made contact with another band of civilization out west of the Rockies. Like a lot of stuff they're struggling with. Like, oh, my God, is there anyone like us out here? What the fuck is Georgie, if not a person like you? I'm this part of the world building seems like it's completely disconnected from everything else that's happening in the series. And I don't get it.
Yeah, I just don't think they knew what to do with Lauren Cohen, like, leaving the show.
Well, gee whiz has been 2.5 years. Like, come up with some ideas. Like, I, you know, start spitballing. Yeah. It's your universe. When she comes back, she can be doing whatever the fuck you want her to have been doing. But, like, it's just weird that it's like not it's I don't know, because it's like, I guess you're supposed to believe that Alexandrians know what she's doing, which is fine. You know, they can leave us in the dark, keep their possibilities open. But then Aaron shouldn't be wondering, like, are there any good people out there in the world? Yeah, you've made contact with a vast network of them that are doing trade and, like, bartering, like, technology and reestablishing civilization. The fuck? Like, this is, that's the plain old stupid version of the stuff that's going on in this episode. Like,
I don't remember enough
pieces of world building are incompatible, I think.
Yeah, I just don't remember enough about Georgie. I can't remember if we were ever told, like, what the extent of her connections are. Because, yeah, she had, like, a fancy book and a couple of... She had information and goods to trade, but, like, was she trading out in the world to other people? Was this, like, her first big trade that she did with this book? I don't even know.
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I don't know either. But, like, Maggie's been sending letters from some place in south of the, I don't know, Mexico, or somewhere along the Gulf of Mexico, south of where they're at.
Yeah, we don't even know what's in the letters. We don't
really know. I guess they're not literally in Georgia. They're actually on the East Coast. Yeah, so when they're saying south, that actually means something. Yeah, I just feel like that if they're getting regular letters from Maggie, they should know. And unless Maggie, the only thing that would make sense is, like, if Maggie's group, unbeknownst to us, is also the same group that was working with the trash people to divide people into A's and B's, and there's something sinister. But Maggie living with them for a year, sending constant letters, hasn't known about that yet. Like, that is pop. But then again, why would Aaron think that there's no good people? Because, like, from what Maggie's been saying, unless Maggie's saying, you'd never believe we're getting cattle cars full of people and they're dividing when teams A and B, and I'm not sure what they're doing it, but that seems very normal. Like, you know, not at all like my experience with the Terminus folk. Like, what? I don't get it.
Yeah.
It's stupid.
Here's a big mistake by Ezekiel. You never tell a woman who just stepped off a fishing boat that she looks good. She knows you're lying.
She knows you're full of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, nobody looks good when they step off a fishing boat. Come on.
Girl, you look like a peel and eat shrimp. A lot of work and you smell funky, but I'll eat you up all day long. God, there's a lot of work to get to the good parts, but I'll dip you in cocktail sauce and slurp you down all. That's the pickup line. You acknowledge that you need to be deveined. You gotta have that shell peeled off of you. You bought a bunch of extra legs I don't need anything with. That's the honest way to flirt with someone stepping off a shrimp boat.
Right, you say not much of a rind on you, and everybody knows that you look relatively good.
Yeah, you go with Westworld. You go with Westworld, prostitute. That's what you do.
Right,
robo probo.
Here's the other weird thing: this insert shot of Daryl's sign language book in his back pocket. Do we need that?
Like, I mean, since he just—I mean, I don't know. It's
let
all
the actor, like, sell it, which he did. He sold to me like he's kind of learned and he's learning, and
yeah, he's 6 months into a learning process. Sure,
it was weird. I don't know. So then Daryl asks Carol about the fishing boat life and tells her that the skin freaks might be back, and he asks if she wants to go looking for signs of them, but she just wants to go out on his bike. So that's what they do, and they go zombie hunting together.
And another thing, they're starting, he's like, hey, we're starting to make this new path to get around a river. Like, you know, hey, fuck these roads.
Yeah.
Let's just make our own goat paths, because what do we need for trade and whatnot? I thought that was cool. One thing annoying, these people are working on small boat engines. Why are they not sailing? There is a very reliable, free, you need no moving parts way to get around the ocean.
Yeah,
it's very, very. We've been doing it for thousands of years. Like, rediscover the fucking Bermuda sloop, everybody.
It wasn't in the book. It wasn't in the book. They don't have an example. Yeah. There were no boats in the museum for the blacksmith to get his hands on. And
the blacksmith had no example of a sailing vessel. But I just, like, man, I was like, That would be really cool. Pirates of the Caribbean and there's got to be tons and tons and tons of sailboats all up and down the coast that you could salvage and rig up and make more canvas for. Like, I was disappointed that we're getting like fucking Bubba Gump shrimp boats instead of like really cool sailing yachts and schooners and whatnot.
Yeah, I'm a little worried because we've seen what happens to boats in this world. One washed up on the shore. Apparently a lot of them wash up on the shore because they talk about in this episode how they're constantly finding these things and getting hauls from them.
Wouldn't that be amazing, Ed? Just searching for ghost ships. You go clear like a big freighter. You take it, you clear it of its zombie. I mean, this is just literally like that. What's that pirate game we were playing a couple years back? Sea of Thieves?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, you can literally raid a ghost ship full of skeletons and kill it and take its plunder. Like, that sounds like a pretty cool life, honestly.
Yeah, living in an adventure game sounds pretty sweet.
Is that going to be the Carol and Daryl spinoff? Walking Dead on the high seas?
Well, they said they're going to New Mexico, which is our next spot here. In the episode.
Not a lot of ocean available in New Mexico, unfortunately.
No, not at all.
Bummer.
Yeah, but I don't know. That's where we're heading. So Daryl and Carol track a deer to the border, and Carol wants to cross over the border to go get it, but Daryl says they can't, and the walkers eat the deer. Afterward, Daryl invites Carol to come home, but she says she's a sea dog now, and Daryl calls Carol his best friend, and she gives him a lot of shit for it. And they're both sad that their old group isn't together anymore and that their lives are just about surviving now. So they talk about running away together, and then the explosion happens.
I dispute that Carol, that you could feed 200 people that deer. I'm sorry.
It's a small deer.
It's a pretty small deer, unless you're literally giving everybody just like 1 cubic inch of meat.
The appropriate serving, like 3 ounces of deer meat.
Yeah. Yeah. This with 200 pounds of potatoes, 100 pounds of onion, and about 50 pounds of 200 carrots, pounds of potatoes. You can feed 200 people. I guess 200 pounds, a pound of potato a piece. That's
plenty. I'm full. That's no about deer what they give me, you thanks.
Fry guys. It's about what they give you for Fry Guys with a small fry. I'm going to stand true. By a pound of potatoes per person, per diem.
Yeah.
Potatoes per diem. The PPD. This is a great scene. This is the other scene that kind of got me a little choked up. Just like these old friends teasing each other, or her talking about matching bracelets and dog collars. And what made it work in the end is at the end, he actually had a little bit of, he'd been, I guess he's just twisting that on the spot.
I was like, okay, when she gave him shit about friendship bracelets, I was like, okay, by the end of the season, we will see a friendship bracelet exchange between the two. And it was by the end of the scene. Blew me away.
And that makes sense because, like, from my experience, a lot of people who are like self-sufficient backwoods types are actually expert seamstresses and weavers and embroiderers because, you know, it's like the same thing about old age of sail sailors, man. Like, they can whip you up a wedding dress as easy as a mainsail of a vessel. Like, they're just like, those skills are very, very handy to have. So it doesn't surprise me that he's able to like whip up some kind of friendship bracelet and with a moment's notice.
Melissa McBride in these scenes might look like a bucket of shrimp that need peeling and deveining, but man, I love her so much. The line, I'm a sea dog, man. It's just like,
yeah,
perfect. She's so good.
And it's also kind of sad because you also knew that she had settled into her life at the kingdom with Ezekiel. And were it not for that tragic thing that happened to their son, she would still be that happy person. And like, I think that's what Daryl is, too. Like, he's like, yeah, you could go out and be a sea dog, but like, I know as your friend what would make you the most happy. And I need you to come back from that. I like it. I like it. It's not pushy. And obviously I would love to see some kind of spinoff with them doing whatever, but
I don't know if it's in the cards, man. Like,
I know.
Every time Carol experiences some kind of setback, and granted her setbacks are severe for the most part, she goes off and wants to be by herself, right? She goes out to the open ocean, becomes a sea dog. She goes to a cabin off on some random road away from everybody else. Like, this is her MO. She just disappears in the woods.
She cares. she cares about people so much that she cannot, like, the only way she can get away, like, get away from that burden is to literally get away from people.
Yeah.
Because she hangs around people. She naturally cares for people. She wants to take care of them. She's tough and shit, but she's also tough and resilient and can take care of herself. So, like, if she removes herself from people, then that gets rid of that burden of taking care of them and not even taking care of them, caring for them.
Well, you know, and maybe letting her tendencies toward violence, because she has those as well, get them into more trouble, right?
So maybe the only way she can, at this point, the only way she can be hurt is if others, people that she care about, gets hurt. Because if she gets hurt, she'll probably die, and who cares? It's over for her. But, like, that's the thing that really can rip her up still, and she's trying to protect herself from it. It's great. Yeah. It's, and the fact that she's still, like, winning and charming and charismatic while she's kind of wallowing in her misery is pretty cool, too.
She has a similar brand of like leaving when things get emotionally rough, like Daryl does. But Daryl's is different. Daryl's feels a little more destructive, self-destructive.
Yeah, but that makes sense too, because they both have long histories of shitty families that have not been there for them.
Oh, no, the bond between these characters is super strong.
It all makes sense, because when the things get tough, they want to get away, because people to them means danger and attachments and things that weigh them down and take away from their personal freedom and survivability. It's a great, and the fact that Daryl, the one who's like even more, like possibly the most more damaged than her, even the one saying, "Hey, it's time for you to come home," I think is very powerful.
It is. And this is why in these scenes I'm thinking, oh man, there aren't very many characters that I really care about in the show anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, we've lost all of the main characters except for Daryl and Carol from the very beginning of the show, right? And at this point, like, the stuff they've did 8 seasons ago is the stuff that still resonates and is powerful. The journeys of those characters are the ones that I still care about, and we're just losing them left and right.
Yeah, I do disagree that that's like, it's because I thought that there's a lot of things impactful last season. I thought Carol coming to like this relationship with Lydia, and honestly, that's the one thing I'm a little disappointed on, because like I thought that, you know, Carol got to a point where she realized that she had work to do with Lydia.
Yeah.
And she's kind of abandoned that. And you see that Lydia is having a hard time in Alexandria. But yeah, like the things that she went through, losing her son, choosing to leave Ezekiel, like those things resonated. You know, those, it's not a lot, I'll grant you, from season like 6 through 8. But a lot of things in season 9, I think, do impact my understanding of Carol and deepen my appreciation for what she's going through right now.
All right, let's take a little break and we'll come back and talk about Lines We Cross. All right, we're back. Everybody's panicking because the satellite that fell to Earth is going to cause a fire that might spread, but it's on the other side of the Whisperer's border. What the hell are they going to do? Well, they decide to cross and put it out anyway, take that chance, and they fight the fire all night, and they start running low on supplies and running low on energy, and that's when the walkers decide to close in, and there are just a ton of them, ton of walkers.
I
guess we should take this as it comes, because the next section is called Embers. This is like the only scene in that entire section.
Yeah, I just want to say that, like, I thought all the forest fighting stuff was cool. Like, it's a little, you know, these people walking around with 5 gallons of water on their back fighting fires. But the stuff that they were doing as far as making burn lines and, you know, cutting down trees and removing the fuel, like, that's how that's back burning. That's all like legit firefighting techniques and.
Using sand is a replacement for water, because it's probably lighter, I'd have to imagine.
I thought it was really cool. Ezekiel just being like possessed to stop this from happening because he's so traumatized. Like, you know, the fire was the beginning of the end for the kingdom. I won't let this happen to Oceanside. Like, I thought that was really cool. Jerry being a human bulldozer and badass was cool. It's good stuff. You do wonder, like, when the zombies attack in mass, especially when we saw the Valley of the Dead at the end of this episode empty, was this like a deliberate attack of the Whisperers, or is this just the result of Whisperers migrating back north? You know, like, they're maybe it's earlier in the season than we suspect, and they're just now wandered from their migration, and they're going to come back into their herd lands. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I do know that this isn't even a fraction of the walkers that we saw in that valley before.
True. So True. That was a lot of fucking walkers.
Yeah. If this is intended to be the punishment for crossing the borders, they need to try harder. And they can.
Yeah.
They've got, you know, they peeled off a little slice of uranium here, threw it in with a small nuke, but they might want to take a bigger slice next time. So, sure. And then we go to Embers, and there is some slow-mo zombie fighting action, which we saw, or we talked about earlier. And they managed to put out this fire. Eugene, however, refuses to leave before stripping this satellite, so Michonne gives him 5 minutes, and we find out that Daryl and Carol are missing.
Oh, yeah. So again, the slow motion zombie kills, I love. I love, especially the one that's like looking down the barrel of Daryl's crossbow as it's shooting a bolt. And I'm like, yeah, what, man, did you guys just discover high speed cameras? Because holy shit, this stuff looks really cool. Carol using a zombie for a fire extinguisher by slitting its throat.
Jesus.
Like,
this is the best example of stupid.
Yeah, it's right on the border, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's almost, and in fact, I kind of wish she'd been like, she's like, everyone grab a zombie, and like they form a line and just start, just, you know, like that would have pushed it even more into the Z Nation stupid boundary of this condition.
I find it hard to believe that there is uncoagulated blood in a single zombie.
I know. Right. And then fucking Daryl bringing down a flaming tree with one well-placed axe swing like he's Paul fucking Bunyan.
I couldn't believe when someone shouted, lead them to the fire. You just spent all this time backburning and drawing lines and trying to put out this fire. You want to set zombies on fire and let them roam the woods?
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
a terrible
fire doesn't kill zombies, certainly not instantly on this show.
Not instantly.
Or even ever. I don't think like
there was that one pit where the zombies were burned, but they were still alive, right?
Was that one zombie that was like that melted into the street from being set on fire and tried to get like I used to think that a fire would cook a zombie's brain, like
right.
I don't think that's like the hot
Georgia sun does when they sit in a car, right?
The zombies might have evolved a little bit. The zombie virus might have evolved for some heat resistance because that just in several seasons has not been the case anymore. If you burn a zombie to ash, they'll stop moving. Sure. But that's about what it takes. These hero shots are just super sweet. I love it.
They are. My biggest what the fuck in this entire episode is what does Eugene think he's going to do with satellite parts? And you might have explained it might be so far-fetched that I just couldn't conceive of the idea.
Are you serious that you don't think there's anything on a satellite that would be useful?
Gyroscopes, this is a super highly specialized dude, it's nothing you can't get in an electronics store down the street. There's nothing generic enough in a satellite from the 60s or whatever that's going to give you the shit you need to do the job
you're not looking for a hobby shop. 100 feet of wire.
You can go get motors and gears and radios and shit at a hobby store. Like, just raid a hobby lobby. You're good.
Like, I feel like, there could be some, like, thrust, like, you know, RCS thrusters and maybe some servo motors and gyroscopes and things. And certainly what I'm going for is, like, a radioactive decay reactor. I want everyone to know that I know that there's no way you can turn that into a nuclear bomb. Okay.
Okay.
But I don't know that the Walking Dead writers know that. And I certainly don't know that they think that that's some rule that couldn't, like, if they're like, if Eugene says, this is some experimental Soviet side that had a blah, blah, blah decay reactor, and it was condemned by the UN and they denied having it. Or they just like, yeah, I'm just going to enrich this thing somehow. You spin up some fucking centrifuges made out of coconuts. I've seen Gilligan's Island.
Oh my God, they're blacksmith.
I'm just saying.
Where's their blacksmith? You got to go to the Smithsonian. And get an example. Their blacksmith is going to shit a brick when he sees what they ask him to do.
That's what they're going
to
do. They're going to go to the Smithsonian and they're going to steal one of the mock-ups of Fat Boy or was it Fat Man and Little Boy? Fat Boy and Little Man? I can't remember the names of the two first nuclear weapons.
Yeah, something like that. Pretty sure
I'm positive that the one that they're going to neutralize, either it's going to be like Alpha is unwilling to commit her force to a nuclear inferno, or Eugene's going to pop this in the middle of their thing and just take all the zombies off the board. Like,
Yeah,
I feel really good about this prediction.
The mention of the nuke, the whispers having the nuclear option here, I think is definitely the clue you need to say this season is going to get real dumb.
Yep. And something crashing for space. Like, yeah, I promise you, if this is dead on, I have been avoiding spoilers. I'm just saying, I think the Walking Dead's ready to swing for the fences. They're ready to split the atom, baby.
I think we're going to need a mid-season skit that deals with Eugene's time at NASA.
The Eugene's Manhattan Project. Uh-huh. What does that even look like? Eugene tickling the dragon. He's playing the demon core. Yeah, no, I got to see that.
Yeah, so that happened. And then Daryl and Carol are not lost. They're over there looking at the canyon where those walkers, the skinwalkers, used to keep their walkers. It's completely empty. And Daryl practically begs Carol to stay, threatening to sink her boats if she doesn't. And
yep.
Then he leaves and Carol sees Alpha come out of the woods and she is spotted. Take the shot,
yeah,
Carol.
What timing?
You got a shot. Yeah. Just take it.
Just scream and run at her. You
War's
know,
over.
Like Dragon Ball Z style. Yeah. Just have the one-on-one single combat.
Yeah.
It actually, I thought that this she was having a vision, like a waking vision, the way that Sadiq did. Because I'm like, what are the odds that I guess it's not terrible because there's this massive fire. Alpha would probably check it out. But it's just funny that the two tough ass women in this series have a nice long stare down over this gulch. And it's kind of Western as hell, too. I do love it.
Sure. Bad
Carol
Peltier, in the future, though.
Medicine woman. Yeah. Oh, for sure. So the thing is, do you think the Alpha, they'll just go straight to war or there'll be some peace talks? Because there's also some talks about like, well, maybe they'll see this as a good thing. Like this is kind of like this helps them out too, because you know obviously a forest fire out of control in their range, they're ill equipped to fight it. We took care of it for them, then retreated. Like, do you think that like the Alpha will grant any clemency based on that? Or
I don't think she's inclined to. I think she's a stickler for the borders.
She respected the borders to this point, which kind of surprised me. Implying that she doesn't really want to go to war against these people.
But she defined the borders. Like, that's the thing. Like, she...
And in a very provocative way, let's say, you know.
Right. Yeah, heads on pikes kind of way. Mm-hmm. I don't know. She doesn't seem like the type to be very lenient on the rules that she establishes.
Speaking of borders, they show this big stretch of highway that makes up a lot of their border. One of the ones that they use to travel from Alexandria to the kingdom and vice versa. Those roads are trash, man. Yeah. Like I almost wonder this bridge thing was like a doomed effort because, you know, like with how long the roads is going to last in a zombie apocalypse if they're not patched up between winters and things, especially in places where you got freeze thaw cycles, not real long. Yeah. They looked all but impassable. So it's like, I almost wonder if the bridge being destroyed and them having to find other ways is better off in the long run.
Could be. That's it for the episode.
We are going to collect feedback. If you'd like to send it to watchingdead@baldmove.com, we're probably going to consider that all at the end of the season. But what we're doing also for feedback, kind of exciting, something we're just starting, is every Wednesday night after a new episode of the Watching Dead podcast airs on or is released on Tuesday, Wednesday night at 9 p.m. We've got this app called stereo.com/baldmove. It allows me and Jim to start a live show and take audience feedback that you record in your own voice with your phone and the stereo app. If you want in on that, go to stereo.com/baldmove. Again, Wednesday at 9 p.m. You can follow us. So you get a notification of the meeting and listen to our discussion. If you got something you want to say about this episode, please no spoilers for us. Don't like if you've seen season 10, but if you do you want to get in on the nuke speculation or anything like that, go to stereo.com/baldmove Wednesday at 9 p.m. We're looking forward to talking to you. And then we're going to take the audio of that and release it in the feed like Thursday or Friday, just so people can hear it You know, the ones that weren't able to attend. So that's how we're going to be doing feedback until we get to the middle section, and we'll all of our long form written feedback sent to watchingdead@baldmove.com. We'll consider then, right after episode 8. Sound good?
Sounds good to me.
Does that sound clear? All right. And I think that's it for the week then. Yeah. Again, get your feedback in to watchingdead@baldmove.com or show up this Wednesday at 9 p.m. at stereo.com/baldmove. Talk to us live. We'll see what lines get crossed next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.